CBS Ireland World. I'm John Baptist with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, Gatestone Newsweek in the Hill. And we turn to the breaking news about the Biden administration and the People's Republic of China. Tense U.S.-China meeting ends, says the CNBC headline. Before talks with U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman even ended, China said the relationship, quote, is now in a stalemate and faces serious difficulties. Also, the state news agency is reporting that the vice foreign minister gave Wendy Sherman two lists, like homework. One of errors, I'm reading from CNBC, one of errors, that's in quotes, it needed to address, and the other of issues Beijing considered important. We welcome Steve Yates. Steve is a veteran of national security. He worked for the Bush administration, for the vice president. He is now the CEO of DC International Advisory, but I call upon his knowledge of East Asia and the culture of the Communist China Republic, the very strange culture of regarding an adversary as if the adversary needed to do homework. Steve, a very good evening to you. Can you recall an incident, an anecdote like this where the Deputy Secretary of State turns up and she's given homework?
John, this is the first I have heard of this kind of treatment and exchange. It's not shocking in the sense that Secretary Blinken and his defense counterpart were treated equally badly by counterparts when they met in Anchorage. But at the time, they didn't seem to hand out the homework assignments and sort of the re-education assignment of fixing your errors and rememorizing our priorities, which we assigned to you to address. This is something that is very bold and different. Also, the blanket judgment of being at a point of crisis and problems ahead, it's very, very stark language that I don't recall occurring from the 1990s forward to today. So clearly, China is feeling bold and in a position to tell the United States Deputy Secretary, here's what you need to do to work to fix this.
Gordon, what were your thoughts when you read this report? Were you surprised or did you laugh? How do you remember it, Gordon?
You know, I have to say that I was a little bit stunned. I mean, after the Anchorage meeting in mid-March, we could see the Chinese were extremely arrogant. But I thought that they might pull back a little bit because it wasn't playing very well in the United States. And for them to do this, and remember that Xi Feng, who gave the two lists to Wendy Sherman, is a couple ranks below her. Right. So this really shows, I think, incredible just sort of disregard of the United States, no respect for the counterparts, which means China really doesn't want to talk to us. So, yeah, I was surprised by this.
You have a question for Steve Gordon.
Steve, this couldn't have played very well with the Biden administration. Is Beijing out here just to intimidate and think it'll work, or is there something else going on here that would make sense of this?
Well, my strong suspicion over the last few years is that something has changed in the thinking and approach in China. And I think those of us that were on the more skeptical side of the spectrum of watching China or were less surprised by it. But I think all of the optimists that believed in the soothing scenarios of China's peaceful rise and engagement being conducive to moderating behavior, just the movement on Hong Kong writ large, the aggression towards Taiwan may be more similar to past behavior, but really turned up a notch. But the wolf warrior behavior, I think, has just gone several degrees beyond anything that had been seen before for a very, very long time, if ever. And so I think the only thing we can point to is weakness in China that the Communist Party has to crank up control or risk dissolution, which is one, I think, rational scenario, or one where they see provocative weakness on the part of the United States. And so they feel like they have a time and opportunity to push the limits where they'll meet with the most minimal resistance.
We're told there are separate events going on in China that maybe they connect, Steve, so I'll try them. One, the odd diktat about how IPOs will be handled overseas, if at all, by successful Chinese technology companies. The one about ride sharing is for center because the Chinese are looking at either clawing back the IPO or punishing it to the point of no one will be interested in investing in it. There's also talk about never allowing an IPO outside of Hong Kong and Shanghai again. And then there's the flooding that is said to be part of a crisis management team. However, no one of significance is attending the flooding, not the premier, not the president. And then there's a report that the president, Xi, is in Tibet or has been in Tibet several times looking to establish bona fides for the passing of the Dalai Lama from the present a dignitary to a successor that China that the PRC will choose. Now, these are independent events, but I'm wondering if what we're looking at here is turmoil within the Chinese Communist Party. The flooding is a failure of the regime that dates back several thousand years, Steve. You know this in Chinese history. Emperors come and go because of flooding problems. The question about IPO certainly, what you'd have to say, limits the growth of China's capitalism indefinitely. And then the matter of Tibet. I'm just wondering how weak do you think they are, Steve?
Well, I do think that the hold that the Chinese Communist Party has is much more tenuous than a lot of mainstream analysts would assert. The sort of more soothing analysts have had the upper hand in U.S.-China relations for decade upon decade. But it's very, very hard to see this insatiable and aggressive need for total control coming out of the CCP as anything other than coming from weakness or fear. A truly increasingly powerful regime that truly had buy-in from more of the Chinese people would not need to do these things. The economic development would be on autopilot. The willingness of the people to give in and support would be on autopilot. There is no need to be a Mao Zedong 2.0 if things were working the right way in China. So I see this as a warning flag that it's more tenuous there and that could create grave uncertainty. But my view has been a minority view in assessing this for a long time.
Gordon, we have about 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Steve, you know, you talk about Chinese weakness. It just seems to me that this must be something going wrong because nobody in Beijing can think that this is going to have a good effect on the Biden administration because they're delegitimizing their friends. And they've delegitimized their friends in Europe as well. I mean, what's going on here?
Right. They're definitely making enemies where they don't need to. They basically had everything in the incoming administration, one of willingness to toss aside the Trump administration's policies, which a lot of mainstream analysts would have said were tough on China. So it was a very favorable environment for China. And yet, whether it's the concentration camps against the Uyghurs, these other forms of aggression, even the impunity with which they've acted on the coronavirus epidemic, it just seems like they feel like they have to be the top bully right now or they'll fall back.
And Steve, a domestic audience for this treatment of the Deputy Secretary of State, they would brandish this as proof of their strength. We have about 30 seconds.
I do think that that's the way they brandish it at home, but Gordon is exactly right. It plays in the opposite way, most negatively, everywhere else, including in the Biden White House and in the U.S. Congress.
So we're looking at China concerned about its home team paying attention to what the Wolf Warriors are doing. They want Shanghai, they want Beijing, they want Wuhan, they want everybody to applaud in China. And that's why they're abusing the Deputy Secretary of State. Steve Yates, a veteran of the Bush administration, the CEO of DC International Advisory, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.